Welcome to the Jeff and Jamie feed, our first time at the Supperland Bar.
I know, we never film here in Supperland. We're usually over at Growler's Poor House, but we are filming today on a Friday, and our team is prepping over at Ever Ondolo and Growler's Poor House and using those kitchens, and so we figured this was the quietest place we could be.
Yeah, with the leaf blowers.
I know. Well, but if you hear leaf blowers out there, it is just part of the ambiance here at the bar at Supperland here today.
I love it, but what a cool day we have. We have Eric Cacciatore coming to speak with us.
And you said his name right, Cacciatore, like chicken Cacciatore.
I can say food things pretty well. Yeah, I got those down. But he doesn't work in a restaurant. He doesn't own a restaurant. He's not a chef. So what is he doing here, Jame?
Well, I love that we talk about food and beverage from a ton of different angles, and this is such a great example of that. We're going to dive into the whole story, but Eric travels around in a van and talks to restaurant owners, operators, chefs to learn more about the restaurant industry, share stories so that it can be helpful to other people in the industry. And his podcast is called Restaurant Unstoppable.
Yeah, he talks to hundreds of people a year, and he has this unstoppable knowledge of the restaurant industry just from being able to talk to so many people in so many different endeavors. But you said something that was very close to my heart.
What's that?
That he sleeps in a van.
Yes.
Just like.
I know it's close to your heart. So Jeff's father, who has now since passed, but he used to live in a van for 9 months of the year to travel around and play in USTA tennis tournaments.
Yeah. So it just shows me that you have to have a certain level of devotion.
You sure do.
And passion for what you do. And you are 100% committed if you're doing that. And that is your life, and you must be just laser focused.
Yes, and your dad, his home was in Sarasota, but 9 months of the year, he'd travel around, and he was always in pursuit of a gold ball. Now, don't laugh. Jeff, do you want to explain what a gold ball is for USTA tennis?
So when you win a national championship in a USTA event, you get a gold ball.
And that's pretty cool. You have some gold balls, Jeff.
I have 8 of them, 6 of them with my dad, which is pretty cool. So we got my dad some gold balls, and we had fun playing father-son tennis together.
Yes, and I think one of the most beautiful things, too, about your father's story is that it has been documented, at least in some light. He was featured in a documentary called Gold Balls, and it follows ultra senior men's tennis. And it is such a fun story, and there's kind of 5 characters that they follow, and his dad is one of them, really one of the 2 main ones that they follow. And what you will see in that is that passion, that devotion, that love for what he does. And I will never forget, there's that one scene that always makes me tear up. And it's, now mind you, this man is 85 years old, and he sleeps in his van, but not just sleeps in the van. He sleeps on the floor of
his
van.
He's got a little mat.
He has a mat that he sleeps on, but there's that scene where he is out running in the rain. And you see him running through the park here in Charlotte. That scene was actually filmed here when he was traveling through. And then he goes and he crawls into his van and goes to rest on this mat.
Yeah.
And it is just, it's so just heart-wrenching to me, I think, because I know that wasn't an exaggeration. Like, that was
no, and he didn't care at all because he's so committed that he's just everything else in the world.
What's there to complain about? I'm playing tennis and I'm going to win a tournament.
Yeah, so I love it. I love the parallels. I can't wait to just get in depth with Eric and see where this goes.
I love it. Let's go ahead and bring him on.
We have Eric Cacciatore from Restaurant Unstoppable with us today. I am so excited to have a professional podcaster with us.
Yes, because we don't know what we're doing.
Actually show us how to do this. So we're really glad to have you.
Yeah,
I think
thank
that's
you.
The first time I've ever been called professional. So it feels really, no, I'm just kidding. No, thank you for having me be here. It's a pleasure. Did I cut you short? Go ahead.
No, not at all. You know what? You're going to have to wear a different hat today. Today is not your listener hat, Eric. Today
Except
is your talking hat.
He's got a restaurant unstoppable hat on, so I think he's dressed well.
I know. Let me ask you a question. Are you feeling unstoppable
every
today?
Every day. All day, can't stop, won't stop.
I love that. I love that so much. And what's funny, and I told you this the other day, that I had reached out to you, I want to say 5-6 years ago, to see if you were ever passing through Charlotte, and we couldn't make things work. But you were coming into town this weekend or this week. We were able to go onto your podcast, and then you're now on our podcast. And I'm just so grateful for you taking the time to come here to Charlotte.
It's a mutual feeling. Honestly, I need to be better about getting on podcasts. So this is a great opportunity for me to share what I'm doing, spreading the word. So it's a great opportunity. Thank you so much.
And we're going to flip the script on you today. So it's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, tell our listeners what it is that you do, because you know we talk about food and beverage from so many different angles. And this is a really unique one because you're not an owner operator in restaurants, but you know so much about restaurants and you talk to so many people. Tell us about what you do and what your vision is and mission is for Restaurant
right.
Unstoppable.
So I'm the host of Restaurant Unstoppable podcast. 13 years, almost 1,300 Ooh. Episodes. Mission is to inspire, empower, and transform the restaurant industry. But I started this because I was looking for it, and it didn't exist 13 years ago. So my parents opened a restaurant when I was three. They had it for 10 years, and I was 13. Coincidentally, when they just were actually, there's a whole story behind that we can get it into, but I'll save that for later. Basically, I fell in love with the industry. I knew I wanted to do this at a young age. My parents talked me out of it, and I became a commercial pilot, and I was flying to the age of 26, 27 years old, working in restaurants all throughout that time. And I found myself looking forward to my part-time jobs, not flying, but getting to around the people I love, right? The
yes.
restaurant people. So I made the decision when I was 26 years old to resign from aviation to go back to school for marketing and hospitality. And that's when I discovered podcasts. And I was looking for this restaurant podcast. And I was like, where is it? And I'll stop there in case you have any questions.
No, I think that, well, I want to learn more about your parents' restaurant. So yeah, if you could tell more about that, because that, I think when children are raised in that, you're seeing things from such a different angle. Like those are such formative years. And I would love
to
hear about that.
It was a small mom and pop restaurant in East Kingston, New Hampshire, just east of Kingston, as a matter of fact. And it was like the center of the town. I think it's what restaurants are supposed to be. It's where everybody went to congregate, to share stories, to talk politics, to talk, you know, what's going on in the town. And it was just like this old fashioned, like right on the railroad tracks, like coffee, like countertop.
This
you know,
sounds right up our alley.
Little,
is it available still?
Oh no, it is not. But it was just my parents. My dad is and mom were from just outside Boston, Everett in Chelsea, Massachusetts. My dad's 100% Italian. My mom's Irish English. And when they moved up to New Hampshire, it was a food desert at that time in the mid 80s. And my dad, growing up with his whole family on the block. And like their life revolved around food. He was like, I got to do something about this. So he just brought what he missed from the city to the country in terms of food. That's kind of where it all started. But they had no restaurant experience. So they had lines out the door almost every weekend. People writing about them from all over. People driving hours to go eat at their restaurant. But they didn't know how to pay the bills.
Okay.
And they were giving food away because their location wasn't great. You know? They just... And, you know, they were loved. They did hospitality really well. They did food really well, but they didn't know the business of restaurants.
So do you think that's like a lot of the reason why you're driven
100%.
Towards helping?
Yeah. So behind it all is my parents. The avatar, my target market is my parents. Mm. What did my parents not know that would have made them unstoppable? You know, we closed after 10 years. They were unstoppable, I should say. Like, with the fact that we did end up stopping, but like it wasn't because of their not willingness to try or the support they had from the community.
Yeah.
So after 10 years, the lease was up, the first location. There was this corner lot, best spot in town. Carmen's Fried Chicken was there. It was an institution for like 60 years. The woman, Carmen, was 93 years old, I believe. And because of the reputation my parents had, she was basically going to sign over the property to my parents.
Oh, yeah.
And the last words she said to my parents is, I can finally rest in peace. And then the next morning they went to go sign the paperwork and she had passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
She was really ready to rest in peace.
She could have waited just one more hour. They could have signed the papers.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. It's amazing people can hold on to their life till it's neat. They really can.
And I mean, I hate to make jokes about someone's past.
No.
But you know, it just goes to show how volatile the restaurant industry can be. One hour can make the difference of like the next thing, right? So in the restaurant industry, as you know, I'm sure in 2009 when you were getting started, you lived week to week, day to day.
Oh, for sure.
Negatively.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have time to figure it out. They had to get jobs. They had kids. So that was the end of the restaurant for them. So,
So that was the but so then you, I mean, I know you've worked in restaurants and everything, but you've taken this completely different route but still being involved with restaurants because you love the industry.
Let's just talk about the fact, I mean, I've had a few conversations with you and I've listened to your podcast and
you
are so knowledgeable and an expert in like so many different fields surrounding the restaurant business. And you can just tell it's because, I mean, the numbers don't lie. You've had 1,300 conversations with the top restaurant people across the country. And that's what you do. And you're doing it every single day, having these in-depth conversations. Your conversations aren't just glossing over either. You are diving in, getting all the info you can.
I get it all up in those nooks.
Yeah, and and then you're supplanting it too with reading books and keeping up with what's going on in the industry. And so it really shows that it's crazy. You don't work in a restaurant. You don't own a restaurant. You're not a chef, but you are a restaurant expert.
Well, thank you. That's a very nice compliment. I do feel like an imposter a lot. I do suffer from imposter syndrome.
Don't we all?
Well, I mean, we all do, Eric. I host, arguably considered by many, and it's a honor to be considered by many the number one restaurant business podcast. And I've never opened a restaurant.
It's okay.
Who the hell am I?
But like, you're listening all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. But I did grow up in the industry, and I got to experience first row seat of what it's like and how hard it is, but how great it is too. Being a part of a community, being the center of a community, being able to carry a conversation with adults at the age of 5 years old, which has probably been grooming me to be a podcast host for all this time. But the dream was always to open a restaurant. The reason I became a commercial pilot was because I wanted to make a bunch of money,
so you
retire and open a restaurant.
I love it.
Because my parents taught me that they convinced me not to do it, but really what I learned or what I pulled from that was make money first, then open a restaurant.
And then spend it all.
Yeah, and then burn it all.
Opening a restaurant.
Today I won't open a restaurant unless I have an army behind me and $2 million of somebody else's money to burn.
I don't know if $2 million is enough.
I know, right?
Well, for a small place, though, like a mom and pop shop, it's amazing.
Great point. Yeah. Or just start really small. How bad do you want it? You're not defined by your restaurant. You're defined by your vision and by your willingness to show up. So, like, you can start by getting the domain and doing pop-ups.
Yes.
That costs very little. You are a restaurateur at that point because you're on your path.
That's right. That is so true. So your lifestyle is kind of unusual. How often are you on the road in your truck? Do you call it a truck? What would you call
it? It's a truck camper.
So it's a truck camper.
Yeah, it's a Chevy Silverado 3/4-ton pickup truck. And on top of that sits an Adventurer 86 FB camper.
So I knocked on his door this morning to invite him inside here to the podcast.
Yeah,
that's
great.
And I was like, oh, hello. Good morning. I love that. Okay. So
the camper has been a part of my life for 3 years. This is my third year on the road, not continuously.
Yeah.
But the reason I got the camper was because I wanted to do more journalistic work. So prior to the camper, I was on the road once a month for a week.
Okay.
And I would go to a market. I would line up 10 interviews. And I would crank them out, and then I would come back home. It was like a sprint. But what I started to, like the last question I asked you, and I ask all my guests, is who do you respect and admire and think would make a great guest on the show? I don't want to be the one who decides who to make an example of. I want to democratize and decentralize that level of, it's not like being a guest on Restaurant Unstoppable is going to like drive traffic to your business like a Michelin or a Beard Award, but I do think that success recognizes success, and I do think that the people that I'm looking for aren't necessarily the people that are looking for the attention. They're in it for the love of the game.
Right.
So how do you find those people?
Right.
Through word of mouth.
Yep.
So to get around to it, the camper lets me go into a community, with two or three leads and stay as long as I need to find out who those people are through networking and talking to
others.
So it just kind of lets me go deep. So I can be in town for a month as long as I need to be to get that person.
Because you have all your work stuff with you. You have Starlink, a great little... Okay. So you just do your work from the truck, from the camper.
Yeah.
And you just continue on down the road. If you find other markets or whatever, you can just keep going.
Yeah, basically, I just go to where the opportunities are.
Yeah.
It's constantly evolving. Where I'm at now is I really just want it to be like, who is the person or maybe it's not even a restaurant owner, maybe it's an author. Who's the thing that I'm really curious about? That's going to be what pulls me to a market. And then while I'm there, how can I get eight more interviews?
Right. Yep, for sure.
So this lets me do that at a consistent $2,000 a month. You know, I can budget that. Like I know this is like, and then gas, which is throwing a hard curveball.
It sure is right now.
That was unpredictable. But anyway.
Well, what's your favorite part about like the lifestyle of being on the road? I know you have a girlfriend back home, and family and so forth. But what is it about being? Do you love being on the road? Is it fun?
My number one core value is freedom. And I learned that, I think I've always known it, but I've taken all the personality tests and now I definitively know that my number one core value is freedom.
Amazing.
Autonomy, agency. You know, I want free will, and the camper lets me do that, and it lets me do it on my terms. Right. I do have a girlfriend now as of 2 years, starting this August, 2 years. So it's going well. I don't want to jinx it, knock on wood. I know this is real wood too.
This is real hickory. That's right.
Yeah. So it was actually after my first year on the road, was when she and I started dating. So it actually is serendipitous because I got out of my apartment. I basically shifted my apartment expense, $2,000 a month, to my living expense on the road. So I wasn't homeless, but I was all in on trying to get this to happen. So I came home for the summer. My family has a cabin in Maine on a lake. So I just park it up there, you know, and just like that's my happy place in the summer.
It's beautiful.
And that's when...
Sounds awesome.
And that's when Courtney and I met. So the timing was serendipitous. She's been incredibly gracious. You know, she has a beautiful home. So I call her my sugar mama because she lets me.
So she lets you stay there every once in a while.
I do pay rent. I'm usually on time with it. She's great. Yeah.
I love that.
So how is the podcast business going? I know it's evolved a lot. Like we've switched to video and, you know, I think people have gotten a lot more professional with their podcasts and the technology's a lot better, but, how is it? Is it a viable business plan?
It's so hard to know how your podcast is doing sometimes
because
it's so hard to compare. At the peak, my show was getting about 5,000 to 6,000 downloads an episode.
Okay.
That's which awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot. Like I'm nowhere near Joe Rogan, right? I'm not getting millions of downloads per episode. But the thing about podcasting is that it's a very targeted audience, like you know, right? So you can't it's a very complex thing to measure value on a podcast. Mm-hmm. So 5,000 to 6,000 downloads is probably five to six times more than any other podcast at one point in time.
Yeah, right? That had to put you pretty high in the rankings of as far as restaurant podcasts go.
So keep in mind, I started the podcast in 2013, 2012, Blue Ocean Effect. I was first in the market, and I was putting out at 1.3 episodes a week. So not only am I putting out twice as much content, but I started twice, three, four times as long
early.
Ago.
Yep.
So I think that, do I think I'm the best restaurant podcast? No, but I think that.
I think you're pretty solid.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think the reason why I rank really high is because of how long I've been doing it and how consistent I've been doing it and how much I've been doing it. So those things in the world of ranking and SEO carry
just
a lot of weight.
Up.
Yeah.
Would you say that consistency is like getting the three out a week is one of the big things that let you thrive?
That was probably a 1 year period. And I was like, this isn't sustainable. Cause I was also working full time. Okay.
We're every other weekers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think what's more important is consistency. So I wanted to go all in and have this be my full time thing. You are running six restaurants on top of doing this and a show,
building two more. And
if I have advice for anybody who's starting a podcast, know that it's a job. It's a lot of work, and consistency is hard. So it's better to start doing it like once a month. Can I handle this? Can I do one more?
Then go and then add on.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're lucky. We have a team that helps us out too. So just like everything here, you know, we have 330 employees. And I'm so trying. we have some that, you know, come and help us set up and do the sound. And
How do you take, like, you've got your podcast. How do you mentioned the idea of growth and so forth. What does growth look like for you? You're a one man show, but you've got, you know, there's uncountable restaurants and topics that you can go into, but what does that look like for you, like growth-wise? What's your vision?
I'm going to answer that, but you asked me a question that I haven't answered yet, and I still don't think I've answered your question.
Oh, so no.
How long am I on the road? 5 to 6 months out of the year is
okay.
What it looks like right now.
Nice.
I'm trying to get between 3 and 4. I'm trying to figure that out. And the question that I didn't answer from you is, how's the podcast today? I say between 3,000 and 4,000 downloads is what I'm doing, but there are also more restaurant business podcasts today than I can count, and the market hasn't changed. So I think that
but you still have to be near the top though of those. So while you might have a few less, I don't know if there's.
If you Google search what is the number one restaurant business podcast, Restaurant Unstoppable is the top resource.
That's what I'm talking about.
I love that.
It's not the feed.
Those are also algorithms. You know what I'm saying? So like, do they show some level of truth? Yeah, but almost twice as much content as the next most produced podcast, and almost twice as long as the next. So I think I just want to be like humble and say like that has a lot to do with the number one, and I'm not like crazy, like, you know, I'm the best at what I do. You know, it's like it's consistency, show up first to market. It means a lot. But to answer your question that you just asked, that was on the heels of that. What was it again? Remind me, the most recent one.
Jeez Louise, I got so captivated by what you were saying. I'm not even sure what I was asking.
Growth.
Oh yeah, growth. Yeah. Okay.
How are you going to scale this thing and grow?
That's a great question. So that's one of the biggest, like, what is scale, right? And that's probably one of the biggest things that's been holding me up as the host of Restaurant Unstoppable. Like, what is the goal? What does it mean to be unstoppable? Like, what is, like, do we scale to 1,000 locations? Do we do 6 locations really well and make a big impact in our community? Like, what is growth? What is the goal?
Yeah.
So in terms of scale, I think if I have to pick a side, if there's a line, I think scale is doing what you're already doing better. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I think if you do what you're already doing better, if we are judged on that, then opportunity comes. Mm. And then it's a game of picking the right opportunity, right?
I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, I think that's like kind of one of our core things is just keep getting better.
Yeah, right. Continuous improvement.
Continuous
every
improvement.
Year.
Keep learning. Keep getting better, and you'll be in a better place. Even if you don't open another restaurant, just do what you're doing better at all the places.
Where am I right now? I think, how do I do what I'm doing already better? Or how am I doing what I'm already doing better? I think it's me doing more of what I'm supposed to do and outsourcing a lot of what I'm not supposed to do.
Right.
So in order to do more, you need to learn how to do less. Right?
Yes, always.
So
that when you can start giving away your tasks to other people, you start like thinking big, moving things along.
Because you have the bandwidth, you have the time.
Doing more of what we're very lucky to have our Suzy Films partners that we do our TV show with to help.
Like, these folks got all these partners. I gotta ask them about how to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they're helpful and help produce the show for us and kind of put everything together so we can really focus on bringing in really cool guests and having conversations with them.
And that's where I'm at right now is like, I can try to carry the world on my shoulders. My mission statement is literally to inspire, empower, and transform the industry. But the layer below that is to change the world through inspiring, empowering, and transforming the restaurant industry. So I can't change the world alone. You know, like
no,
I can't.
But it does, like, that kind of spirit, like, tells you one person can make a difference. And we talk about that too. Like, sometimes you feel
one spark is all it takes.
Yes, exactly. And it seems like, it's not a big deal if you do this one thing. Like, us moving that building, you know, September 2024, moving that. Like, it felt like, does this even matter for Charlotte's historical, you know, culture and scene? Okay, maybe it's not that big of a deal, But if a whole bunch of other people do some big things like that to help preserve or to help tell that story of Charlotte's history, it does matter. And then what you've done, like you've built with others to create change.
Yeah. So what is better? Is it new things or is it preservation of things that matter?
Right. Whatever that is that lights you up, I guess.
I was going to say, though, that you do have an effect on people. And even when I listen to your podcast, I feel like we have a pretty large restaurant group. I mean, we're not like extremely big, but we're pretty forward thinking. And I pick up tidbits that, you know, kind of, you know, make me question and didn't think about or validate something, some rabbit hole I'm going down.
Yeah.
So I appreciate all of those things in those conversations you bring up. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really the thing is like, I go into every interview as a student and I try to like wash myself of any bias I have. Easier said than done. I'm not always perfect. But I really try to go into it with an open mind. I only give myself 30 minutes to an hour max to like do research on my guests because I don't want to go in with preconceptions.
Yeah.
I want to go in as somebody I just met and like, oh, I heard I need to talk to you.
Yes,
you
a might fresh be able to conversation.
Help me, right?
Yeah.
And then you just kind of like, you can take it all in and like it lets you be curious. You don't have any preconceptions. You can just listen and hear from them mm-hmm. what their story is and what matters to them. And to your point, like everybody I talk to has a unique pathway to get to how where they got to like there is no one path mm-hmm. there is a million and one infinite actually ways you can get from not owning a restaurant to owning 7 restaurants or 20 restaurants or 100 restaurants, and I've spoken to all those people. So it's really just a matter of listening to as many different perspectives as possible and to cherry pick the way that makes sense for you mm-hmm. based off of your uniqueness.
How does sponsorship, what role does sponsorship play in terms of your growth and scalability? Like, is that something that you're looking at?
It's the number one way I've been able to do this.
Yeah.
I'm extremely grateful for my sponsors.
So growing that is a big, who are your sponsors?
And this probably, like I say things I probably shouldn't say that probably don't help me in the long run, but the truth, like super grateful for all my sponsors. US Foods is a current sponsor. Love them. Restaurant Assistance Pro has been a sponsor for 3 years. They've been incredibly supportive. Margin Edge was another sponsor, Restaurant Technologies Inc. I don't want to go through all the lists. 'Cause I'm going to forget somebody, but I've been so grateful. And it's not that I don't have the gratitude for my sponsors. What I'm learning is that if you want to do a true journalistic podcast where you're digging and looking for truth and looking for perspective, when the people who pay your bills are the ones that really want to, if you start sharing a narrative that doesn't necessarily support their agenda, then it might not work out, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. So what's really important to me is I don't even edit my podcast. Like, we'll edit if somebody has to go to the bathroom. I won't make you sit in dead air for like, you know, 3 minutes, but we don't even edit because like, I want it to be raw.
Yeah.
You know, I want it to be transparent. And if I have a sponsor that is like the number one POS in the industry and somebody else is talking about how they've been so pissed off with that POS system,
right.
You just keep rolling.
That's not going to make my sponsor happy. And now when that sponsor is paying my bills, it puts me in a really weird position, you know? So you asked the question earlier, what is my plan for the future? It's to continue to have sponsors because that is a part of the equation, but to not make that my bread and butter. So there's 3 ways you make money with a podcast: through sponsorship, affiliate marketing, and using your podcast to promote your own thing. It's a marketing tool. It's content marketing. I started this thing as a student. I wanted to learn. I built what I was looking for. I don't have a product to sell. Mm-hmm. I don't even own a restaurant to promote. Like,
yeah.
So my whole thing is like, I'm trying to figure out like, what is it that I can create that's not the podcast that I can generate revenue from? So the other part of Restaurant Unstoppable, our vision. So you have restaurantunstoppable.com LLC at the top. And then below that you have Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast. Now I'm trying to vertically integrate in Restaurant Unstoppable Network, which is a 13-year, 1,200, almost 1,300 plus word of mouth network of specialists in leading restaurateurs across the country to say, listen, part of the answer to our future is we don't have to do it alone. we have to stop looking at the other restaurants in our communities as competition and as collaborators. And it's the best in the industry that choose to collaborate with others that rise to the top, because we're all specialists. We all bring something unique to the table. So what if we magnified that? What if we created a network of leading restaurateurs across the industry? And here's the other thing. If we're going to change the world, we got to pull in the same direction. So what is that direction?
Yeah.
And who's going to decide? The tech companies or the restaurants that are, that actually are in it every day, that are on the front lines? Because I'll tell you right now, the tail's wagging the dog. The restaurant industry is not in charge of the restaurant industry. And that's another reason why I'm worried about sponsors, because I want to talk about this. And I think technology has a big influence on where we're going. And it's not
I think the power of the tech companies, though, is moving back towards...
It's waning.
It's coming back towards the restaurant
people. Why do you think that?
I think just the ability to vibe code.
Oh, boy. No, it's very vibe coding right now.
Did you listen to me talk about it on the podcast at all? Is that one of the episodes you checked out?
Well, I checked that, but I've been working on a few projects to just fill our tech stack.
It's exciting.
And where we have holes. And I do see that Resy Talk and Toast still have a lot of market power because they are mission critical pieces of software.
Right.
But all the other stuff around the edges, there is a big opportunity for us to kind of take some of those things back, own our data a little bit more. But I do love the things that Toast is able to do now with their AI of they're aggregating a whole bunch of data now in our market. And they have this a whole lot of information, and you can kind of find out from AI, like, how am I doing against my peers and in market and those kind of things, which
benchmarking is really important.
I think is really neat, and we just haven't had that info before, so it's pretty cool.
Well, that's exactly why I start every episode off as awkwardly as possible by asking my guests how much money they make and like what's your revenue and percent profit. And the reason why I do that is because I think benchmarking is really important.
What do you find is that number? So can you benchmark? Like, how are we doing compared to other places?
Well, I think prefacing this, that there is more ways to be defined as successful, right? So if you're a if you're a 200, 150 seat restaurant that's scratch, that's got like super talented, experienced culinary, you know, educated, degreed individuals, you know, like if you're doing more than 5%, between 5% and 10% right now, I think you're doing better than 90% of the market. And that's the reality. And I think a lot of people tell you you should be doing 10 to 15%, and that's possible. But what matters to you? Like, does maximizing profit? Because you probably could cut a bunch of expenses. And I sat down yesterday and I did a tasting with you.
That's right. Like, you did.
You're not just letting anything go out that pass. Like, you have standards, and standards are expensive. You know?
You thought I was a little rough on the team yesterday.
No, I just thought you were cringing
a little bit.
Was I cringing? I wore my heart on my sleeve. I was just like, ooh, like, that was a good, I'm like, but like, that's
it's
the
a
culture.
Very critical
industry. Well, it is. I mostly get frustrated though when stuff gets dropped off and the exec chef has not tasted it. And then, so my question always is, did you taste this?
Yeah.
And then if they say yes, then I say, why are you serving this? Because we both can sit here and taste this and say, this is not right. Or good.
You know?
So that's, it was more of a teaching moment of like, because Joe's pretty new at doing the tastings, rather than like, I'm like super mad. It was more just like,
this is the standard. This is how these go. Let's bring it back up.
Yeah.
No, so. And you have to be the bad guy. So, I mean, I don't think you were being a bad guy, but you were being the stern. This is the standard and you're keeping the standard. And it's radical candor. You know, it's like, I'm not doing you any favors by sugarcoating this. Like this is our standard. Like, you fell short of it. We love you. Bring it back here.
Yeah.
You know? And I think if I was cringing because I was feeling his energy. I was just like, because he was starting to be like, and I was like, oh no, bro. Like,
some of it's a discussion though. I loved the, we made them make the carrots a few times, and the third carrot, they just sat down and we just stared at it in the sun to see how long it was going to take to die.
But that's a great example. You're literally like burning cash for excellence, right? Because you have this, there at one point there was a conversation about, okay, how are we gonna comp this as
How are we handling is it in the R&D budget or is it in his food budget? And
whether it's R&D or comp, it's still hitting your bottom line. It
doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah. So like
we have to do it.
Right. So. But the point is, it's like you have an R&D budget that's coming from profit at the end of the day. Yeah. Right. So could you get over 12% if you like took all these like little things and you compound them? Yeah. But what you're after is excellence.
Yeah.
And excellence. So, I mean,
I have a list of all those things that would get us to 12%, and I always tell like the higher ups, I say, if something happens to Jamie and I, here's the list, like open on Mondays, like you know, like let's operate efficiently, let's do all the things and then sell it, and you know,
right.
And
now there are restaurants
we don't operate like that.
I talked to some restaurants that are doing over 20%, but they have a very small, you know, product mix. Like they're doing a few, like Mexican restaurants, for example, they do like the same thing 10 different ways. Right. So like they're like their cost of goods they're not expensive cost of goods either. That's the other thing. And they're slinging margaritas and making $15 on a pre-mixed drink, you know, so the volume, the throughput. So like, it's hard to compare like all the different, and then what about like QSR, you know, like, or fast casual, you're doing chicken fingers. And maybe every once in a while, you might get crazy and throw some bread around it. Like the throughput there is incredible. Like you can literally meet, and it's like you can't compare yourself to that. You're not the same thing.
Right. Yeah. So being that you've talked to so many different types of restaurateurs and operators and everything, are there certain threads that you're seeing throughout? And maybe as a part of that too, like changes over time. You started, you know, 13 years ago. Are there threads of that, I'll say themes, that come out constantly that you're always hearing? And has there been a shift in those themes that people seem to talk about? Whether it's frustrations or glories or, you know, challenges, whatever that might be.
Some of the threads, I mean, there's definitely commonalities. Like, do one thing really well is a thread. If you want to, like, scale something, it's like, if you're looking to scale and to create something into the, bringing across America, then do one thing really well. Put all of your energy into one thing, right?
Yeah.
Be the best at that one thing. That's probably the most common in terms of like success. Behind every great restaurant's a great person. That's one thing that I love to say. If you want to be the best, don't put your energy into getting bigger. Put your energy into getting better, and it starts with you. Because
I like that.
If you put it into yourself, you will elevate yourself. And if you elevate, the natural byproduct of that is everyone around you elevates. Mm-hmm. If you are the average of the people that you surround yourself with, if you're elevating and you're bringing people with you, right? One, you can bring people with you, but two, you can then tap into a new tier of elevated individual.
I love that. Yeah.
And then they're going to pick you up. So I think people think of, we're visionaries. Like we're all like the restaurant industry, we're always thinking about the future. What's next? What's on the horizon? But if we just focus on what's right in front of us and what's closest to us and put our energy into that, the opportunity knocks down your door. But then, even then, it can be tricky because you might take the wrong opportunity or you might go into business with the wrong partner, right? So that's why we write these things down, our vision, our mission, our values. It's a filter. Is this opportunity fitting through this filter?
Does it fit?
No? See you later. Is this a clean podcast? Am I allowed to swear?
You can swear.
Well, okay. I'll
allude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not an F, yeah.
Yeah.
It's or if it's not a hell yeah, yeah, it's an F no. Right. Okay. Is what I like to say. If it's not a hell yeah, it's an F no.
Yeah.
And the way you know it's a hell yeah is by having these values, this vision, this mission. And if it doesn't fit that, it's not, you don't create a culture for your team. You create your culture for you because you're the one that's going to drift.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps you on center.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and then if you're on center, your team, if you're a true leader, you're pulling. You're not pushing. But you got to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I like this. How about you keep your restaurant consultant hat on since you're you're an expert now? So we obviously are completely failing because we don't do one thing really well. We have six different concepts. And
no, but that's not the thing. That's what you want.
But that is what we want. So how would you tell us, knowing that we're failing your number one thing, how would you tell us that we should grow? And what would be your consulting pitch to us of like what we should do?
For the record, I think if you were trying to open 1,000 restaurants, do one thing really well and keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, that's not what we want to do.
Exactly. And that's not, I'm not saying that that's what we should want to do. And I think that there is an issue with a lot of other media outlets saying that, that they glorify the fastest growing company. Like, there's this issue with our Western civilization that, like, we're judged by how many restaurants do we have, how fast are we opening them, and how much money are we making, and can I get private equity? Or, you know, like, it's like this race to sell as fast as possible. Mm. That's not the restaurant industry. That was never the restaurant industry. The restaurant industry literally was born out of the thing that I think what makes us what we are, which is this tribal, communal, loving, like, species that thrive. Like, we literally thrive off hospitality.
Coming together, being with one another.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, if you look at the history of hospitality, the word hospitality derives from the Latin word, like, hospice or something like that. And it literally means guest and host.
Okay.
And hospitality isn't a one-way street. It's a two-way street. For every give, for every moment of generosity, there's a moment of gratitude. Mm. And it's in that two-way street of, I see you, I'm doing something for you. The return is, I feel this, I saw what you did to me, and I see you back. And that is one of the most important fundamental, like, just like, we need to be seen as human beings. It's like the third thing up in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So, like, that is, if we aren't seen, our desire, our need to be seen is part of our evolution, because, like, we need to be valued by our tribe. Because if our tribe doesn't value us, they don't see us, they're going to kick us out. And we're going to be on our own. Mm-hmm. And we don't do well on our own 15,000 years ago.
Did you feel it when you got to Charlotte that this is the city of hospitality?
Jeff is on this drive that Charlotte is the city of hospitality.
Hands down, the number one hospitality city in the city.
That's
and I say that every city I go to.
We're starting from within, and we are bringing Southern, that forth into the world.
I want you to feel, like, kind of when I drive to Atlanta, I feel that the energy on the highway and people like 3 inches from your bumper and everybody driving super fast and all these trucks around, kind of like that. But when you get to Charlotte, it's just a happy place and full of hospitality and love.
I think Southern hospitality is truly a thing. Like, I feel it, and you're in the heart of the South, aren't you? So, you know.
Yeah, this is the epicenter of it, right here.
So tell me this, all these years, how many podcasts have you done in total? About?
I think I'm in the 1,280 area, but to eclipse 1,300 this year.
That's amazing. Yeah. So, congratulations. Are there certain conversations that you've had that you're like, it has changed your view of the industry, or that were kind of pivotal moments as you were going through, and just, I guess, conversations you like truly remember?
I get that question a lot.
And maybe you can point us to specific episodes too for people.
It's like I think it's like a parent with their children, you know, like you love them all.
Yeah.
And I've done so many now that a lot of them start to bleed together. I mean, there's, you know, if I'm the way my brain works, if we were talking about something, you'll trigger a memory.
Yes.
And like, then I'll be able to be like, oh, like, you know, like, I'll pull something from one of those conversations. I think it's just more to your point, it's themes, right? Mm-hmm. Behind every great restaurant's a great person. Own a great restaurant, become a great person. Like, you know, like, that's how it works. More isn't better. I think that we live in a culture where we prioritize doing more, having more, being judged by how much we have. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's part of my mission to create a more conscious society that recognizes that it's not about how much we have, but how much we give. And you need more to be able to give more, right? And I think that's the one, if there is any reason why you want to get rich, it's so you can give it back.
I often tell my children, like, their job as they get older is to make sure that their cup is running over, because if they're taking care of themselves and, you know, being good stewards of themselves, health, you know, mind, body, spirit, education, all that, then their cup runs over and they can pour out to others.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And I think there's multiple forms of capital, right? Mm-hmm. There's liquid capital, assets. You know, there's cash and there's assets, but there's nothing more powerful than social capital.
Right. Showing up for people, being there.
We are tribal by nature. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we need each other. And the best way to attract people onto you is by creating opportunity for them. if you make everything you do about helping other people, it comes back around. So, mm-hmm. And I see that with what you're doing here in this city of Charlotte. And that is, I meant to say this earlier, coming back to that thread of commonalities, it's the people who choose to go further together, or the people that choose to go together who go further, mm-hmm. right? And I think we use our businesses. I do believe that the restaurant industry, if there is any industry that is best positioned to change the world, it's the hospitality industry.
We're so threaded with communities yeah. and people. There's so many
and it's
people.
It's what we need more of in the world right now.
Yeah, to run a restaurant, we say this all the time, but 90% of the revenue that comes in goes right back out the door, and we're so threaded. And it's a place, as you were alluding to, that people come together. You know, they're places for networking, enjoying time together, yeah. doing business. Just celebrating whatever it might be.
I think you can change your mantra to, I think for us, it's 100% that comes in, goes back out as into our
new projects. Yeah, that's
so
true.
So we are just in this phase of, you know, pumping whatever we have into these new projects and growing, and we have a growth plan. And a lot of it is for our team to give them opportunities and do cool things.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to keep good people need to feel like they are safe, like they have that security, they can pay their bills, they see a future where they're going to be safe, they want to feel like you value them, you see them, they want to feel like they're growing, mm-hmm. they want to feel like they're getting better, and they also want to feel like they have found their purpose in life. And you can do all those under the umbrella of a restaurant. And there's, to your point, there's so many specialists. We are so good at putting people on tracks and seeing what is amazing about that 18-year-old 17-year-old, 15-year-old, right? That might be working in our restaurant. They aren't self-aware. They don't have a frigging clue what they're supposed right. to do for the rest of their life. But you can observe them. You can say, wow, kid, you're really good at this. Like, you got a talent for this. And that is a hint for that individual. I'm more self-aware now. I'm good at managing a lot of mm-hmm. things. I'm really hospitable. I light up when people walk through the door. I'm really good at this. It's those reinforcements continuously through the career, the growth of an individual that will put that person on a track. Mm-hmm. And there's so many destinations within the industry where you can end up. There's so many tracks.
Yeah, and that's so immeasurable. You yeah. can't measure, you know, the thought that, you know, I'm thinking of Sydney, our host over at Leilua Hall, like that, you know, I can see her light up when people walk through the door and how much joy she has and how much she wants to help people, and allowing her to see that treasure within her, you know, that she is fantastic at that. She'll continue on that path in some way, whether it's right. with us or not. But you're right. Like that growth of individuals, I think, is something that we are so passionate about. We have so many people who leave us all the time.
Right. And you know
but okay.
would they leave? Do they leave to go do their own thing?
Sometimes. Or they go on another track. Or they go to another restaurant. Yeah. They need to go on their own path. But we try to.
But what if you could be a part of that next thing? Right. Yeah, what if you could be the thing that opens up that next thing for them? Mm-hmm. Maybe they have a dream of opening their own restaurant. Yeah. Well, you have reputation in the city. You have a network of people that can help them make it happen. Why not be the bank? They're going to go to a bank. Why not be the bank? Mm-hmm. Why not invest in them?
Our money's all gone. It's all going into the Leaper Wyatt building.
I can tell you why we can't be the bank.
Yeah, but you are creating opportunity for others.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So, and knowledge and support and things like that too.
Right.
So are there any questions? You always, as part of having your own podcast, you're constantly asking other people questions, and you probably don't get to talk very much, but are there any questions that you wish people would ask you to tap into the knowledge and expertise that you have?
No, I can't think of anything. I'm more curious. You know, I think what drives me is curiosity. Mm-hmm. I can never, I like the unknown. You know, I think that's what pulled me into this industry, because I didn't know what the most successful, I didn't know what the restaurant owners that were going on vacation with their families that didn't really have great restaurants were doing that my parents weren't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the whole idea of one of the mantras of Restaurant Unstoppable was what the most successful restaurateurs know that you don't. Like, what is it that like makes people successful? And I've learned a lot, but I think what I'm learning now is that a lot of what's holding independent restaurant owners back isn't within the four walls of the industry. It's outside of the industry. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of things happening at higher levels that pull the restaurant industry off of the track it's meant to be on. And that's a whole other.
Money speaks very loudly.
Yeah,
to people,
I mean,
right.
And we live in a national, global marketplace, mm-hmm. and we're never meant to exist in a national, global marketplace. As like, we're meant to be. We're meant to know what's going on immediately around us. Mm-hmm. So I think when we have to compete at a global, have you ever heard of Zipf's Law?
No, but I want to hear it.
No.
So Zipf's Law basically states that in a given marketplace, that resources are distributed unevenly or disproportionately in a given marketplace. 200 years ago, a marketplace was a town. Mm-hmm. And so the number one, pick any category of like business.
Food supply, farming,
okay. Iron right. work.
Any one of those things. Yeah, the number one restaurant, right, would do twice as much business as the number two restaurant, three times as much business as the number three restaurant, four times, and it would continue on. So that is the uneven distribution because word of mouth leads everything. So if you're the best in town, everyone in that town is going to say, if you're a cobbler, go to this person. He's going to fix your shoes.
And you don't even, you could be 2% better than the next best restaurant, but you're doing twice as
because the word
well,
of mouth.
Because,
so yes. It's going to be, it's always going to be unevenly distributed. And that's given any market. So now, that's fine when 200 years ago, when you have hundreds of markets, or maybe where were we 200 years ago? Like we were making our way out west, right? 100 years ago, we were on the West Coast. We had thousands of marketplaces and it was fragmented. And it's probably the one time where the middle class was healthier than ever before because the money was being spread out. But now we're in a national and or global marketplace, depending on what market you're in. And there's room for only one number one burger joint. And that's McDonald's, you know? So when you have a global or national marketplace, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, because there's only room for one to be the top dog. Mm-hmm. So I think that is an example of how if you only have one POS or if you have a number one POS, a number one reservation platform, a number one distributor who just bought one of their biggest competitors,
right?
You know, like that's not good for the restaurant industry.
Right.
You know, that's not good for
society.
We have
less choice. Yeah.
We need to be intentional with our resources. A number one research, like search platform. Oh, how are we doing on time, by the way? Because I'll just keep going.
It's okay. You're fine.
We can wrap it up. But my point is, I think we need to be conscious capitalists. Mm-hmm. We say buy local, support your local farmers, support me. What are you doing to support your local economy? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And there's restaurants all over the country. We can be the pivot point. Where we start doing things differently, mm-hmm. you know? So that I'll stop there because I'll just keep going.
I love it. But, I mean, so many great points. Like, your insight's awesome. Your experience at 1,300 interviews of restaurant people is...
And growing.
Yeah, and growing. It's unstoppable.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And we look forward to listening to your podcast as we go. And all of you out there, make sure you check out Restaurant Unstoppable and learn more about the restaurant industry because it is a really unique business that we're all in very different ways. And we thank you for following along. Please feel free to like, subscribe, comment. We'd love to hear from you and follow along on Restaurant Unstoppable as well.
Thank you.